Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Surviving the Days Ahead. This is your host, Reverend Deborah Marshall. Now, today I am back to serious business, talking about how to survive such things as home invasions. Now, these are dangerous times that we are in right now, and we need more than ever to be prepared for anything that might come our way. I have the beginning of a supply list for you. I say beginning because we will expand upon it, I'm sure. But I got it courtesy of the Red Cross website. Now, I haven't heard much about the Red Cross in the news lately, but I do urge all of you to make a donation to them whenever possible. They are first responders during hurricanes, opening shelters, assessing damage, and much, much more. They don't forget us, so let's not forget them, because they really do good work. Now, if you have questions about anything we discuss today, feel free to call into this show. The call-in number is 515-605-9839. The gift call-in number, again, is 515-605-9839. I hope I said it right the first time. It's 515-605-9839. We have an entire hour today, so you can certainly call in and ask questions if you'd like to. Now, also, if you want to email me, if you want to ask a question you don't want to ask on the air for whatever reason, you may email me at lowercase letters, R-E-V, as in Victor, D-E-B, 1955, at gmail.com. Now, I know that some of you listened to some of the last broadcasts and said, oh, she's flipped her lid, you know, Rev Deb is nuts. And, you know, I understand why you think that. I do. However, there are seven groups of people from other universes that are still here on this planet. They have not all left. I've had any number of people in different countries, as well as people here in the States, that are saying, oh, well, those are just vandals, and they've gone. No, they have not gone. They are just hiding. And they are still here. And they've done a lot of damage with the initial attack back in July and August, and they are still here. Excuse me. They are very good at camouflage and hiding. So one group, the Starlotta, they wear war paint. Now, it kind of looks like grease paint. I don't know what it's made of. But anyway, it is very scary-looking makeup. The other groups have all begun following suit. They have, some of them have masks. They've even had Halloween masks on, and the black mask with the eye and nose cut out, you know. And some of them are homemade and improvised, as well as some of them are taking to the paint, the other groups. They can be pretty intimidating. Now, they are human beings. They are the same type of soul as we are. Their souls are like ours, though their customs of each group varies. And for the most part, they look like we do. Some are a lot taller. The Ganata Sikui are the tallest, and they come in at maybe 14 feet, up to at least 14 feet tall, very thin and very long-legged. And then the others are somewhere between 7 and 10 feet. And there's one exception, the ones that I call the Martians, or that the darkness call the Martians, and those are one of his children, and they are green. Their skin is green, and they wear green uniforms, and they are about 4 feet tall. So, and I think it's the, I can't remember if it's the Sumatra Sea or the Chagri that are the smaller. They're like 5 feet, 5 to 6 feet like we are. Anyway, they do exist, even if it sounds crazy to you, they do exist. And some of them I have heard said that they really hate to be here. They want to go home. They don't understand the point of being here because we're not fighting back, so all they do is they have to go in and hurt people, you know, women and children and property. That is a neighbor moving in and hammering something on the wall. Please forgive me. They have said that they hate that they are so dirty, you know, because they've been outside since early summer, so in the foxholes and everything else. And they're very hungry, they're very thirsty, and they're very cold. Some have been taken and rehomed into new bodies, and that they can do that up there. It's actually part of a technology. After they were picked up after they had pneumonia and frostbite, and they were very sick, and they've been rehomed into new bodies, split into more than one person, so you get like two or three instead of one when they come back, which is not fair to us. And some have been turned into battle-ready amalgams. Now, that means that's also part of the technology that I happen to think is very, very wrong. Every one of us down here has a microscopic chip. That's something we have to agree to before Father sent us in this lifetime. However, they can take that chip and they can fix it so that you have to do what they say and you can't argue. If you do, you get very sick. You're punished. The battle-ready part is that they actually can put a weapon into their hands so that their forefinger or their index finger, they put like a metal thing in there and they can literally shoot people. I understand they can actually take down a 12-story office building. So it's a very dangerous thing. And they don't want that. They are very upset by that. Who does? Who wants to be told they have to do something? You know what I'm saying? Not just in terms of being obedient, but being forced. And that, to me, is very wrong. Now, they want to go home, most of them. However, when dehydration and low blood sugar from the lack of food take over, you can get very confused, you can get angry, and you can fight others as well as yourselves. I would like to say do not confront them. If they are seen on the streets, and I know of at least one person that's seen them walking down the street at night. If you see one of them walking down the street or standing on the corner or whatever, especially at night, with or without a containment unit, and we talked about that, I think. A containment unit is a big metal box that they can literally suck you right out of your body with. And that's also another type of technology. And so if they have a big metal box, especially don't go near them. But even if they don't go near them. Don't confront them. Call the police and report it, whether or not you see a weapon. Now, let's review the disaster supply list. Let me see here. Okay. Now, tarps and or heavy plastic sheeting is a good thing to have. Duct tape is also definitely something everyone should have. Basic tools, pliers, screwdrivers, you know, both the slot and the Phillips head, scissors, hammer, nails, screws, and make sure you have screws that are safe to use with a drill if you have a drill. Why would you need a drill? Well, if you are getting ready for a hurricane and you want to put plywood up over your windows, you know, you need marine-grade plywood, you're going to need a drill and wood screws or whatever screws you need to get it into the side of the windows. Now, water, 1 gallon per person today minimum. And the truth is, and I know that it seems really excessive, but the truth is 2 or 3 or better. Because that 1 gallon has to do for washing up and cooking as well as drinking. So 2 or 3 gallons are a lot more realistic, really, per person if you can do it. Now, canned goods. It's good to have canned goods because you can eat them right out of the can, even if you don't prefer it that way. If you can't cook it, you can still eat it. Dry, non-perishable things like dry soups, dry broth, you know, that you rehydrate, and any kind of long shelf life dehydrated foods. However, make sure you have enough water to cover all of that, because if you have foods that have to be rehydrated, you need extra water. Now, and it can also be munchies, you know, crackers and that kind of thing. Let's see, flashlights, lanterns, batteries, solar-powered and hand-cranked radios, so you can get weather broadcasts, you know, the NOAA channels on there. Very important to have one of those. First aid kit, not just a box of Band-Aids. Try to get a complete one. And I'm going to talk more about that later. But you really do need to have a genuine first aid kit. It's a good thing if you buy one that's as complete as you can afford and then gradually add to it. You know, go out when you see a sale on something in the store, you know, for compresses and tape and different things, go ahead and add to it. So first aid and CPR manual, too. You need to learn how to do first aid and CPR. You know, it's a life-saving thing. You need to know how to do it on adults as well as children, because even if you don't have children, you don't know when you might see someone get hurt, get a shock or something, and their heart stops and you have to work on them. You know, you can be walking down the street and have something like that happen, or your neighbor might need your help. And if we are in the middle of a situation where the police are overextended, then it's important that you know how to help in any way you can. Now, so it's good to take classes in that. The American Heart Association has them. The Red Cross still has the first aid classes and CPR classes. And a lot of classes now are online. So you have more of a choice now than you used to. Let's see, medications. If you have any prescription medicine, 7-day supplies, what you should try to keep on hand. Sanitation and personal hygiene supplies. You know, that can be everything from sanitary pads to toilet paper to, well, it could also be toothpaste, toothpaste, toothbrushes, you know, all of that. Now, copies of personal documents, your medication list and information, deeds to the house or the car, proof of address, passports, birth certificates, and insurance policies. All of that is a good thing to have. Now, you can have it, have copies in page protectors, or you can also have the information on a jump drive, and you can put that in your pocket or around your neck, you know, in case of an emergency. A cell phone with chargers, good idea to have, and try to keep it charged up. Family and emergency contact information. Extra cash in case you have to bug out and go somewhere in a hurry. Emergency blanket, you know, the survival blanket, or even a bivy sack, which in my opinion is better. You can get those. Amazon has them. Any sporting goods store will probably have those. Maps of the area that you are going to evacuate to, and maybe even maps of your own area. Now, you have to consider the needs of each individual. It's important that you do that. You may need hearing aid batteries, contact lens solutions and equipment, syringes if you are diabetic, and alcohol, those little alcohol pads, baby supplies of any kind. Of course, you absolutely have to have the formula and the diapers and the wet wipes and all of that good stuff. Games and activities for kids if you have children. And truthfully, games and activities for adults, too, because if you're stuck inside somewhere and things are already, you're kind of nervous, it helps to have things like that. Pet supplies. If you have pets, make sure they have their food and their water. If they have a bed and you can bring it, that would be a good thing, because they need something that feels familiar to them as well, you know, for comfort. Toys, you know, that they really like. An extra set of car keys and house keys is a good thing, too. A manual can opener. If you bring canned food, make sure you got a can opener. Now, whistles, you know, to signal for help if you need to. Whistles, pepper spray, or mace, and other self-defense things. Now, if you go to an American Red Cross, if they open a shelter and you go there, I would not recommend that you take a gun, okay? That's not a good thing to do. They may not let you in if you have one. But because people are unpredictable in a disaster. N95 masks and gloves, matches and lighters. You could also get, what do you call them? It's like a magnesium rod that you can scrape with a knife to cause a spark. And those are good for fire starting as well. Rain gear, good thing to have. Towels, work gloves, extra clothing, shoes, hats, all of that are good to have extra. Now, let me see. Household bleach is a good thing to have, liquid bleach. Not scented, not, you know, like they come in scents, even though I don't think it, they really smell like what they say. They all smell like chlorine bleach. But blankets, sleeping bags, entertainment items, as I said. Now, they will tell you, excuse me, please, I got an allergy going on. They will tell you on the Red Cross site how to make a disaster plan. They have like a template or something there that you can use. So it's a good thing to make a disaster plan, agree to it with your family, and practice it. There's not a thing wrong with having drills. That's a good thing to do. Now, anatomy of a first aid kit. Now, this is what they recommend, but this is just the beginning. You know, you can add all kinds of good things to it. Let's see, and you should keep a kit if you can. Keep one in the car and the house as well. One thing I've had trouble with, and if anybody has a good solution to it, they can let me know. When I keep things in the car, they tend to dry rot. Thing, you know, the heat during the summer and the cold during the winter, things don't do well. So I think it would be better to have a big kit that you take from house to car and back again so that it doesn't go bad on you. But you have to talk to people about that. Now, at least two compress dressings, 5x9-inch, you know, the big fluffy ones. We used to call them ABD pads. Number two, 25 Band-Aids in assorted sizes. And I think that the cloth Band-Aids do really well. I think they may stay on a little better. One roll adhesive tape, one roll silk tape, and one roll of paper tape. You can get them in various sizes, various widths. And they're saying five antiseptic wipes. Tell you the truth, I would get a roll, I mean, I'd get a little tube of Neosporin ointment and just include the tube. Two packets of aspirin, one emergency blanket, one breathing barrier with one-way valve. Now, if you take CPR with the American Red Cross, you get that. Usually they give you one. And I don't know if they still do, but they did when I took it. And that protects both you and the person you're doing the CPR on. One instant cold compress. At least two pairs of non-latex gloves. You can use the vinyl ones, you know, unless you want a couple of sterile gloves in there. The vinyl ones work. Two hydrocort ointment packets. At least one roller gauze 3 inches wide. They used to call it Curlex. I know that's a brand name. But a roller gauze, you can hold other dressings on without putting tape on delicate skin. If you have someone who's very elderly and their skin's got paper thin, then that's a better way of doing things. Let me see. Also, you can use a roller gauze to help provide pressure to stop bleeding. One roller bandage 4 inches wide. Now, that's an ACE wrap, the elastic wrap. Five 4x4 gauze pads. And an oral thermometer, if you can find one. They're hard to get these days. You can get the digital ones that work okay. Two triangular bandages. Why? Well, they are really good at holding on dressings and making them into all kinds of things. For instance, if you have a head dressing, that can help hold it on better. Plus, you can make a sling out of it. Tweezers and a little magnifying glass to go with them might help, because if you're taking out a splinter, it's easier if you have a magnifier. And a good first aid book. Now, if you take a class, you should be able to get that book. You know, it'll come with the class. Now, we've got a lot of time left, and I did not plan this very well. Apparently, I didn't realize how long it was going to take. to get through 45, I mean, get through 60 minutes. But I also did some investigating on what was online as far as how to survive survive a home invasion. Now, one suggests, let me see here, and this is one, oh, I know what this was. This was how to survive an alien invasion. Now, what we have is the real thing, folks. It really is. What they have is a bunch of foolishness on there. If you want to watch it for comedy value, you can. They said establish communication, destroy them in space, don't panic, nuke them, run and hide, find their weaknesses, and ultimately surrender. Now, that was that stupid film. It was something that people sit around and laugh at because they don't want to believe that such things are possible. And, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, we're finally getting up to that point, which I would like to hope that we're mature enough to understand that there are other people out there besides us. I think most people believe that. Well, now it's been proven. Believe me, we have had our world turned upside down by them, and now we're still sitting here saying, oh, but it was just vandals. Well, it wasn't just vandals, and they're still there, and they're still heavily armed. So we need to be aware that anything could happen. Why they're just sitting there right now, I don't know. But another attack could be imminent, and we have to be ready to handle it if it happens. Now, how to survive a home invasion. My goodness, my handwriting is so bad. I don't have a printer anymore. I've had my whole world's been turned upside down in the last year, so I don't have a printer. Now, where to store valuables? That was one of the questions asked on this little film. I went to How to Survive a Home Invasion and on Google, and this is the kind of stuff that came up, videos instead of actual articles. So it says, first of all, keep calm. Calm yourself. Fight your fear. Escape. Leave fast or find a place to hide. Barricade the door, which, and they said that most home invasions only took about 8 to 10 minutes before it was all over one way or the other. That usually it happens so fast. Defend self as a last resort. You know, it's better if you can get away from them. It says defend self as last resort from a distance, if possible. Call for help. But that should not be the first thing you do, because while you're calling, they can come in and shoot you. It's better to run to find a place to hide first, then, you know, arm yourself, and then call. Because if you try to do the calling first, you could get killed while you're doing it. So be prepared. Security cameras are a good thing. Keeping curtains closed. Never talk about trips that are coming up, especially not on social media. You don't want everyone to know you're going to leave your house because it's an invitation for them to come if they think you have something they want. Now, which makes sense. Now, there's one on there that I thought was one of the better ones, and it was Navy SEAL tips. The man that's giving it obviously is, I guess, a retired Navy SEAL. Prevention, deter, deny, and defend. Put on lights, perimeter, like keep your perimeter lit at night. You know, neighbors can see them and call, they can see the invader. If somebody's snooping around the neighborhood and they see them getting ready to come to your house, they can call the police, or you can. So it's a good thing to have lights on the outside. Motion-sensitive lighting is good. Unpredictable. Yeah, having things around that they don't expect, such as kids' toys all over the place, dog signs like beware of the dog, alarm stickers, this house protected by whatever security company, even if it's not. But to have things like that on the doors and the windows and this kind of thing so that they realize that you might be able to fight them. Installing a security system. Choose Let's see. Choose place well. No. Wait a minute here. I'm not sure now why I wrote that. It says choose place well, no sun on it. I think what they mean is you don't. They're not going to see anything if they look and they see the just see something shining. Then you can't really. The sun's in your eyes. You can't really see what you've put up there. You need ID quality pictures from your cameras if you have a security camera. So you you don't want sun to shine on your camera. That's what that was. So if you're taking a picture of your front porch, you know, like one of these Ring personal cameras, try to put it where it will give them a good picture, whoever comes to that door, even if the sun's about to set and the sun's shining in that direction. If you have an angle, then you'd still be able to see the person. So you want to think about that, which makes perfect sense. Because if it's not ID quality, it doesn't do you any good. You know, if they get in and tear everything up, you still don't know who did it. Now, deny. That means denying access, doing things that help make it difficult for them. Garages are often the number one area where they enter the house by, attached garages. And this is something I didn't know. There's an emergency door, because I've never had a garage. There's an emergency garage door opener that's like a cord or a loop that hangs down. And it's usually up close to the top of the garage, and it's off to the side, and it usually has a loop or something at the end. And they can straighten out a coat hanger and put it through the top and get down to that loop and then pull the cord so that the automatic garage opener is disengaged, and then they just can lift it right up from the outside. So what they said the best thing to do is, if you're not going to just cut it off, which would be bad because then you might get locked in there, if you can't do that, take it and bunch it up so it makes it really hard to get to it, and then wrap it up really tight with zip ties, you know, with the plastic zip ties. Now, that makes sense to me because you still have it, and if you had to use it, you could, you know, take the zip tie off from the inside and use it. So that, to me, is a good tip. But if it's just hanging if it's just hanging down, then they can get to it. Now, let me see. Okay, so they can, let's see here. Yeah, so bundle it up and zip tie, folks. It's a good idea to do that. Now, replacing the screws in your door locks with 3.5-inch wood screws in all of your locks, and replace the strike plate also and all the screws with 3.5-inch wood screws, and make sure you have a nice big deadbolt, not a little one, but a nice deep deadbolt. And protective window covers, they're like films. There's some out there, I've heard that there's some that are rated for hurricanes, and they are strong enough to repel a brick. So if someone were to throw a rock or a brick at your window to break it, it would bounce off. So getting that kind of film, I don't know what it costs, but it seems to me that it's cheaper than fixing your house after they wreck it. So I thought that was pretty neat. I didn't know there was such a thing, so I don't know what it would cost, but I think it's a good idea. Now, in any disaster, if you have a family, you should have a meeting place, and in and out of the house both. So a meeting place where you can get together if all of you are at school and at work and something happens, you know, and you all have to rush to get together. You need a meeting place. If it's a home invasion or something going on in the house, then you need a meeting place in the house where you all come together in a hurry. And you may even want some kind of a signal, you know, or do you have an air horn? You're going to make a big noise or blow a whistle, or what are you going to do to get everybody together? Now, have primary and secondary route to get to the meeting place, too, depending on what's going on. You know, if somebody busts into the front door, how are you going, you know, is there a way that you can avoid being seen by them and still get to wherever you're going to meet? Now, He called this a tactical nightstand. Make sure that your nightstand has a flashlight, some kind of a weapon, your car keys, a cell phone charged up, and hopefully a pistol or bear spray or hornet spray. Now, that was what he recommended, so that it, because a lot of times it would be someone coming in while you're in bed sleeping. And if you hear something and you know someone's in the house, you have what you need to defend yourself. Tasers, baseball bats. I wouldn't use a baseball bat unless there was no other choice, because if you're not strong enough to knock somebody on their ear right away, it could be grabbed out of your hand and you could be killed with it. So I would recommend things you can do from a distance. I think most people would be better off with that. Now, and he also said, remember that your violence has to be equal to or greater than the violence that you want to stop. You know, that you, what the whole idea is to give you time to cut and run. So you have to assume that you're going to be killed and fight that hard. Don't just, you know, do ineffectual little slaps. You want to really try to smack the you-know-what out of them, because if you don't, they're going to keep coming. Now, USA Today had a video on there, door lock covers. And there again, they were talking about the 3.5-inch screws and the larger deadbolt. Have a plan and go to a safe room if you have one. If you can choose a room of the house that you think you can defend yourself better in, then that's one you need to consider your safe room. A number of videos showed people that were actually being attacked. And in a lot of those, women went to bathrooms. And they had things in there that they could use. Some of them had a gun in there. And so a bathroom isn't such a bad place to hide. Now, if you can lock your door, that's not going to stop someone from kicking it in to get to you. But it might give you time to get out a window or to grab a weapon. And if you have the light off and they can't see you so quickly, you know, there are ways that can give you a slight advantage. Now, the Sportsman Channel had one on there. The man's name is Rusty Pugh, who's a technical advisor. And I think it said Sportsman Channel, and I think that there's a magazine involved too. Anyway, an advanced warning. Yeah, an advanced warning. Don't hesitate to do something. Move to position of advantage as fast as you can. Close the door. Grab a pistol if you have one, or whatever you have, bear spray or pepper spray or... So I realize that there are laws against bear spray, but let me tell you, if they come into your house and that happens to be what you have there, I would say use it. I would. Because if they're coming in their house and they're armed, and they probably are, you know, if they're coming into the room you're in, chances are they are armed, you should use it. So, when you know, as soon as you hear someone's in the house, get to a position of advantage, the quickest way you can. And it's a good idea to have your weapon in there. If it's not on your nightstand or whatever, then put it where you know you would run to. And, grab the pistol if you have one. But the idea is to increase distance between you and the danger. Now, activate self-protection. You should have light in the front, you know, of your house. The weapon, well, he was talking about one situation where the light was on in the front room, and they had a weapon in the bedroom, and he said it only took 7 seconds for everything to be over. It was so fast. They came in the front door, and the bedroom just happened to be right at the front door, so they heard them. And they had the gun. They left the light out in the bedroom, and the man was turning to go into the bedroom, and the guy started shooting. So one of the men that broke in ended up in the ER, and that's how they arrested him. But panic shots, not a good idea. He kept shooting after the men turned and ran. And the panic shots can go through walls. And they can also do damage to your house, and they could do damage to family members if they're in another room. So that's not a good thing to do. And he got hurt. I don't know what happened to him. They didn't say how he hurt himself. But he was doing all the shooting. The other guys didn't. They just turned and ran immediately out. Now, you know, one of the first things he asked, are they gone? Is everybody okay? And they called the police. Why not wait for the police? Well, the police are over, most of them are overextended as it is, and you can't be sure that they're going to get there in time. If it only takes 7 seconds for an intruder to bust in on you and have it be all over, then it's better to call and let them know what happened after, if you can. Or, you know, I thought hit 911 and then throw the phone down because they'll hear it. Yeah. And they can also use a cell phone, I think, as a GPS. I believe they can find you. But I'm not sure about that. Proactive self-defense. You know, have restraint. Doors locked. Screen doors locked. Importance of attitude. Know your plan. Get out of danger zone. Close your door. Don't stick your head out to look. There was one woman, the man, he was a thief. I don't think he was armed. He just kind of tiptoed in because her door was wide open. And as soon as she came running, and her dog ran up to him and was being cute. he wasn't a bit alarmed. Anyway, he ran out. But then she ran to shut the door, and she stuck her head out to see if he was there. Now, if he had a gun, he could have killed her. So you don't do that. You shut that door and be glad he's out. I think it was called A Navy SEAL Reveals Home Invasion Survival Tips. And USA Today, Do You Have a Plan? How to Survive a Home Invasion. Those were two, I think, of the best ones. Now, Perimeter Defense by Charlie Hargood. He had a short film on there on aerial denial devices, making it very uncomfortable for people to hide behind things out in your yard. He gave two things that I thought were interesting. One was using like a $5 box of survey sticks, these little wooden sticks, and drive them into the dirt around areas that they might hide behind so that it makes it real hard for them to get behind there. And he advised putting them in at like a maybe 60, 65-degree angle, not straight up, but kind of off to the side where it makes it harder to walk around them and to use that area to hide in. Another thing that he recommended was put in groupings, let's see, behind trees and all. Now, garden hose. Now, this was interesting. A garden hose and a box of 10-penny nails. You take an old garden hose, the length that you want to wrap around a tree or whatever you're going to put it around, and he drove in these 10-penny nails with a hammer so that you had two on the bottom, like you could lay it on the ground with feet, you know, like triangular formation, and then one sticking up. And, you know, they're huge and they're long, and if anybody steps on it, they're going to be sorry they did. You can put those around bushes. You can cover them with leaves and all so that people don't know they're there. But you got to be careful depending on whether you have people living in your neighborhood. You don't want children or animals or somebody that you don't want to hurt to get into something like that. So you got to be very careful. Another thing that I thought was a good idea, and I've not done it, but I'm thinking about doing it, is using two pieces of, I guess it could be wood or metal, with holes in them and stringing barbed wire, like if you wanted to cover your windows at night. You know, stringing three lines of barbed wire across from one window to the other side and have another piece of wood with the holes in it on that side. So you're just putting that up at night. And if you get that up in such a way that you know, they're not going to necessarily see it in the dark. So that could be a deterrent. In other words, they're going to get in if they want to. But that would make so much noise, and there'd be so much cussing, and they would be, you know, it would give them a hard time to get in, and that would give you time to act, to get out or to do something. So, you know, grab a weapon or whatever you have. So that would slow people down. So that's something to think about, too. Now, let me see. Oh, there's one, if anybody loves cats, there's one call when you, this is on YouTube, when you have a cat with a 200 IQ on YouTube. It's just a cute one. Now, good locks, alarm system, and he highly recommended dogs. Because dogs, even if they don't snarl and run and bite, they can bark, and having a dog barking and carrying on can make people want to leave. You know, if they're in just to get something and they're not trying to kill you, then they might run away if they have the alarms going off or the dog's barking. It's, you know, you have to decide whether you're going to run, hide, or flight, or fight, I mean. And he was saying you use any manner, anything you have to do. You know, you have to be willing to go all the way, you know, gouge eyes, kick groin, whatever you have to do, because you have to see it as they're going to kill you. They may not, but that's how you got to look at it, because it can happen. And you have to be determined to survive. There was a list on survivallife.com. Now, I don't agree with everything this young man said, and I think he is a young guy, but I think we've talked about his stuff before, and I've told you about some of the things on there. But establishing a safe room is what one of the first things on his list, and I agree with that. We can't all have mansions with a specially designed room with a tie-in directly to the police and all of that. With a phone on the wall, you know, it would be nice if we could all afford such things. But you can decide which room you want as your safe room, and you can have things like your cell phone and a gun if you own one. And he said in his list, have a safe in your safe room. And I thought, you know, that doesn't really seem to matter. It doesn't to me anyway. But what he meant was keeping your gun locked up and having it there in case you have to go to the safe room. So when you think of it that way, I could understand that you're keeping the gun safe from anyone else taking it, you know, in your family, a child getting a hold of it or whatever, but it's there where you can get to it. Arm yourself with whatever you can find. You know, if they're coming up the steps, throw chairs, throw vases, throw fire extinguishers, you know, anything that you can help them with to keep them, slow them down. And anything that you might have that can stand as a weapon. You've got to be willing to fight if they come after you. And call for help. And he said call for help and wait for help. But no, you can't wait for the help, because if you're sitting there waiting, they're going to eventually break the door down to your safe room and get you. You have to be willing to fight for your life. Now, know the laws in your state, and that's still a very good thing to do. You can look up all the laws on gun laws, and as well as, I guess, your rights. If you're, you know, if it's a break-in, a home invasion situation, there may be some laws in there that explain what you can and can't do that way, too. I don't know. But use the Internet to find your gun laws for your state is a good idea. Be armed. Find something you can use. Bear spray, pepper spray, anything, you know, big knife, a big stick, any, you know, baseball bat, whatever you can find. You should have something that you can grab. And if you do have a gun, for God's sakes, please, please, everybody, learn how to use it safely, okay? If you have children, do not ever leave it laying around the house. And, you know, you really don't want to have things laying around like that if there's children in the house. Never, ever. You have to have it locked up or in a place they can't reach. And children can be very, very good at getting into things. So be careful. Be armed, be prepared, and use good sense, use good judgment. But don't just sit and wait for anyone to help you, because that just won't work. You have to be willing to fight to stay alive. Now, that is a good part of what I was going to talk to you about today. Now, I know that they're saying, okay, the crazy lady is starting in again on all of this alien nonsense. Well, it isn't nonsense. And I'm going to give you the names. I don't know if it means anything to you at all, but I'm going to give you some names of the groups to give you some idea. I don't know everything about them. I know just a little. The Gnadisi Kui is the first group. They had two planets, Siwaltasi, which is now gone, it's been ruined, and Tenastasi, which is has been hurt, but it's not completely gone. And they come from the 1,298th universe. The Sumatra Sea, their planet has been destroyed. They're from the 987th universe. The Starlata. Now, the Sumatra Sea are black. They're dark skinned. The Gnadisi Kui are the ones that can be up to like 14 feet tall. And they can be up to 14 feet tall, and they have sort of a Mideastern appearance. And some of their clothing and all, to me, suggests that as well. Let's see. The Sumatra Sea, I believe, I've seen them in green, and I think I've seen them in khaki. Oh, green camouflage, somebody just said to me. The Starlatas, they are the ones that very often will have the war paint. In fact, all of them do, I think. And all of them, unfortunately, they're all starting to wear stuff like that, so it makes it hard to know who you're looking at. But it really doesn't matter. They're fighting together. They're standing together. The Sandosa, I believe they're the ones that have khaki. They're in the 980th universe also. Both the Sandosa and the Starlata have lost their planets to war. The Sandosa, they are very Mideastern looking. The Gordovas, I have forgotten what they were wearing. What kind of uniform they had, but they look pretty much, I think, like us. The Terrestas, they have one planet left and one planet gone. So I'm telling you, this fight's been going on a while. The Terrestas come from the 9,298th universe. They have a high degree of technology, and they wear white quite a bit. White and some of their, like their wetsuits, I think, are a light blue, that kind of thing. Different than what the others are wearing. The Shagri come from the 9,092nd universe, and I believe they also have lost their planet. They are black, and they wear sort of a tribal-looking. Their clothing is sort of tribal-looking. The Issa Nessa I think is how it's said. Anyway, they're from the 907th universe. And I can't remember what they look like. Let me see here. The Renunciaca are from the 4,980th universe. They come from a planet, Zunataki, and the Tursala. Now, this is one that's interesting. The Tursala come from Earth. They come from Terra in a different subdimension than we do, but they're from our planet. But they're in a different subdimension. They have lost that subdimension to war. Their antimatter containment unit exploded, and the radiation has killed them off. And it's sad. It really is. I mean, they've probably been here for as long as we have, or probably close to it. Let's see. Now, these are the children of the darkness. Now, you know, when we talk about the evil one, we talk about Satan, you know, being the evil one because you hear it in the Bible, and that's what we call like the epitome of evil. Well, guess what? He isn't. He wasn't. He was actually, you know, everybody knows he was born to be an angel, you know, and he didn't make it because he was associated with the real epitome of evil, which was the darkness. He called himself the darkness. And he eventually, within the last 10 years or so, he repented and came back home. And he was actually given his wings as an angel and worked that way briefly before he, before we ended up having to evacuate our planet and go to Bombasia, who was kind enough to allow us to join them. So anyway, so the darkness is when we talk about the evil one, that's who we're talking about. Now, the darkness, for whatever reason, was allowed to create his children, and he created a huge bunch of children. The dark side was his first, and they were poor seen. They were kind of rotund, you know, kind of heavy, round people. They were about, I think, 10 feet tall or so. But they had, their face had a pig-like look to it with a snout. And their uniforms looked a little bit like the way the alien looked in Predator, kind of a samurai-looking uniform. Now, the Dubaisi, I think they can only drink blood. And they, when you see them, they shapeshift. But if you see them in their natural state, they look almost insect-like. And they can hide like on a tree when you can't even see them. They can blend right in. But now these are all of these children of the darkness have they're intelligent. They're human souls in there. Now the Chapadasi, I don't know quite how or when these were created, but the Chapadasi looks like kind of almost a white, fluffy, white, pretty body to it. You know, it's like each hair is, I think, is kind of clear, and so they look very fluffy and light. But inside, you can see a face on them, and they eat human flesh. And somebody made the mistake, started using them as executioners. They would put them on Mars with people they wanted to kill. The Empire did, the ones that were up against. Anyway, they have a taste for human flesh. The Fleur, and they can divide. You give them, but they have to divide. If you give them too much to eat, you got two of them instead of one. So, the Chapadasi. So they are dangerous, but there are a lot fewer of them now than there were. The Fleur were like white butterflies, kind of look like big butterflies. The Lunaisi, they came from the 9,886 universe, and they look like a good size yellow flower, sort of like hand size yellow flower with a face right in the center. And they sound like a canary. They've got a pretty call, and they can fly. But they also eat human flesh, and they can strip a body in about 10 minutes. So they're dangerous, and they can also bite animals. So you have to be watching out for them. If you see a bush full of them, you know, be careful. Don't go too close. They can talk to you by telepathy, if you were able to pick it up. Now, the Klaasernada and the Klaasera. The Klaasernada are male and the Klaasera are female. And they, amazingly, they look like a plant. They've got a very thin white body with what look like branches coming off. They have arms and legs, I think, but I know the males do. I guess the females do too. But they have branches, so they look very pretty. And How they got into this fight, I will never know, because they can't fight. They're too delicate. And they're vegetarians. The Sandlaws, they are black with, they have multi-legged, I don't know, maybe eight legs, and they have little nubbies all over them that are sensory organs. And they have very bright eyes, look like flashlights almost, and very sharp teeth. And they can come, they shapeshift also, and they can come inside of you and kill you that way. The Jimsada and the Damsada are, I think they're very similar to the Klashanada and Klashara, but they're thicker. They look more like heavier branches. I don't know much about them. I've seen some of them, but I don't know much about them. The Guladas. The first Gulada was, looked like a vampire, but he had a very round face, and I don't know how to describe him. I mean, he looked like a traditional vampire with the black hair and the widow's peak and the teeth and a cape. And now they're gone, and the Guladas that are more recent look like older men with the black cape and all of that. And they are vampires. Now, the vampire bats, the adult bats are pretty good size. I'm not quite sure how big, but they're pretty good size. And they have babies, too, so the small ones, of course, are smaller. I'm not going to have time to finish this, but I read this last time anyway. The Dakota Saw is another type of vampire. The Euphoria Khan is also. The Jinn, they are not the terrible demons that people talk about. You hear people talk about the horrible jinn, but they aren't. They aren't. They are actually, they were created out of 5 to 12-year-old kids. The darkness did that to them. The Martians, I told you about the green men that are about our, no, they're about 4 feet tall. The Spookadas, which look like Casper the Ghost, like they wear a white tunic and have very black eyes, and they look like a cartoon ghost. But they eat human flesh. The Sherlatas are green with kind of peaked ears, and they also eat human flesh. The Hortata look like Stitch in the cartoons a little bit. The Crassata de Pur look like big babies. The Barkata, they look like people, but they have, their face looks like a dog. The Samsonia, the Silata Sika, which to me reminds me a little bit of the Cookie Monster, the Gumbasa, and the Humpties. So those are his children. And all of them, except for the Klaserata and Klaserna, and maybe the Jimsada and Damsada, all the others eat human flesh, or they either eat human flesh or they... or they drink blood. Now, we only got about 1 minute and 42 seconds left. I've enjoyed doing this today. I'm getting to feel more comfortable with doing this. It's been a while since I've been on. We got 90 seconds. I just wanted to thank any of you who are listening, and I hope that you come on with your questions, even if, have you thought about psychiatric care? But I also will try to get some more information for you on dealing with things that might come up. But the home invasion thing, that's how they killed a lot of people in the last few months, was just busting in on people and slitting their throats. They didn't even speak. They just overwhelmed them real quick because they didn't expect it. But if you expect it, you can be prepared. And that's a good thing to do. So we'll talk some more about survival tomorrow. I'll be back at 4 o'clock tomorrow as we learn together how to survive the days ahead. And until then, I hope you have a safe afternoon. And hopefully you'll be back at 4 tomorrow as we learn together, as I said, to survive the days ahead and to get caught up on our disaster routines and making our plans. So until then, may God bless. Good night.